Hello and welcome to the Mother Earth News Online Homesteading Summit. This is Marjorie Wildcraft, your host, and I am really, really thrilled to be able to offer you this next presentation with Jeff Lawton. Jeff really is the most world-renowned permaculture designer on the planet, and for excellent reason. After you see this presentation, I think you're going to absolutely agree about how amazing it is. Let me give you a little bit of background on Jeff. He's done thousands of permaculture designs in 50 countries around the world, and his clients included everything from private individuals to groups to communities, governments, aid organizations, NGOs, multinational corporations. Jeff has been doing this for many, many years. And Jeff learned permaculture in 1983 directly from its founder, the legendary Bill Mollison. Unfortunately, Bill has actually just recently passed, and we all are mourning his loss. Seriously, he had such a big impact in the world. But when Bill retired a while ago, he chose Jeff to establish and direct a new permaculture research institute, which Jeff did in Australia. And since then, it has grown and expanded, and they now are in the U.S., in Jordan, Canada, Chile, Turkey, Greece, and Afghanistan. Jeff has won numerous awards. In 1996, he was accredited with the Permaculture Community Services Award, and he won the Humanitarian Water and Food Award in 2010 for the initiative called Greening the Desert. And that's actually what this presentation is about. I want to give you a heads up on some of the footage here that comes in three sections. There's the first section is the first time he attempted this project on a piece of land, and the footage of the before and after footage is really stunning. But Jeff didn't own or control the land, and eventually they were asked to that project no longer became available to him, and eventually his own institute, which is a nonprofit, managed to get the resources together, and they bought their own land in Jordan. And I mean, really, he starts out in the desert. Just brutal, harsh conditions, almost no rainfall, sand, extremes of heat and cold, and he turns it into an oasis that is producing food and shade and medicine, and it's really, really stunning to see the before and after photos. So the second footage will show you the project as it had moved along. And then we have a third section, which has just recently been filmed. It's an update from 2016. And Jeff's organization was telling me this has never been seen before. So this is the premiere showing here at the Mother Earth News Online Homesteading Summit, where you'll get to see the latest update on the Greening the Desert project. Watch it to the end, and then I got to tell you about a special bonus that we have for you. But here's Jeff Lawton on Greening the Desert.
Well, there you go. That says it all. It's pretty lifeless, dead soil, a lot of dust blown in over millennia, lower soil. And this is where we started. And we've ended up in a kind of desert permaculture oasis. We brought this to life. And it all started out there in the agricultural country on better land, but we proved a point. 3 years of working on the Green in the Desert One project with some reasonable funding, and then we lost access to the land. And all that effort kind of felt like it went to waste, but the reputation continued, and we decided we'd purchase some land. We couldn't get the same sort of land, so we're on rough land now. It's rougher than where we started, but we knew we could do it. So we purchased this land here in the Green in the Desert 2 project on a westerly slope, facing the hot afternoon sun, setting right now over Palestine. And we handed the project over to the local permaculture NGO that we created. And there we continue to work. It's been a hard slog, but we're there. We've got an oasis, a food forest, a desert food forest. We've got an education center. We've got people coming here to learn. Our reputation has continued as people who can start with almost nothing, and create something with a global reputation and gives people hope. People have hope. If you can do it here, you can do it anywhere. And that makes it all worthwhile.
So we went in and had a look and we thought, oh no. This is the end of the earth. This is like as hard as you can get. This is hyper-arid, and it's 10 acres of almost dead flat, completely salted landscape, 400 meters below sea level, the lowest place on earth, 2 kilometers from the Dead Sea, right, to about 2 kilometers where Jesus was christened. Hardly got any rainfall. We've got temperatures in August that go over 50 degrees. Everybody's farming under plastic strips. Everybody's spray. Everybody's putting synthetic fertilizer on. Overgrazed with goats, just like maggots eating the flesh off the bone, down to the bones of the country. Literally like maggots, giant maggots eating it to nothing. So we designed up a system that would harvest every single bit of rainwater that fell on it. On 10 acres, there's 1.5 kilometers of swale, water harvesting ditch on contour. And when they're full, 1 million liters of water soak into the landscape. And they'll fill quite a few times over a winter. And then we heavily mulch those swales with organic matter, which was trash from organic fields nearby. And we put that almost 0.5 meter deep. So we saved that and mulched our swales, which are about 2 meters wide and 0.5 meter deep on the trench. Then we put micro irrigation underneath the mulch. And then on the uphill side of the water harvesting trench, we put nitrogen fixing, very hardy pioneer desert trees, which help shade and reduce wind evaporation, and also put nitrogen into the soil and structure the soil for us. And then on the lower side of the trench, we put fruit trees, majoring in date palms as the long-term overstory in the end. And then we put in figs, pomegranates, guavas, mulberries, now some citrus. Within 4 months, we had figs, a meter high, with figs on, which is impossible. We've done a course, male and female course, trained up some locals, and we got a translator who's working for the project. He had his degree in agriculture in the Jordan University, and he got onto his mates and said in the agricultural department, well, you said we couldn't grow figs, we got figs growing and we got figs on them, you better come and test the soil, because no matter what you say, we're either growing in salty soil what we shouldn't be growing, or we've desalted the soil, and we'd like to know what we've done. They came in and the salt levels were dropping, so they became interested. The salt levels were dropping around the swales. They said, you must have washed it through. See, normally you put a huge amount of water on and wash the salt through to the lower levels, which just makes the groundwater more salty. In the end, you'll salt it 20 metres deep if you keep doing that. And then it will take 1,000 years to recover. And we use only 1/5 the amount of water. So the water, they thought we'd washed it all through. No, we'd use 1/5. That really got them when they realised how much water we hadn't used. We, with the same amount of water normally used on that much area, we could have done 50 acres. Originally, people laughed at us because we didn't put straight lines in. We went on contour with these swales. They thought, why don't you put it? So you've got a bulldozer, you can flatten the desert, you can straighten it. So we want to go on contour because we've got a longer edge and we harvest the water passively. Then we planted more non-fruiting trees than we did fruit trees, so they laughed at us. This is what we're planting unproductive things, more unproductive things, what's the point, you know? In soil that won't even grow anything, so, you know. And then we covered all the inside of the swale with a huge amount of mulch, where they scrape all their organic matter off and burn it, like most traditional agriculture. In the middle of winter, we got a funny email saying, we've got a problem. We've got mushrooms growing in the swale. Well, they called it fungus, but when we saw a photograph of it, it was mushrooms, because they'd never seen mushrooms, because they never had that much humidity in living history in the soil. And when you open up the mulch, there's all these little animals there, you know, there's little insects, and the soil has come alive. And the fungi net that's underneath the mulch is putting off a waxy substance, which is repelling the salt away from the area. And the decomposition is locking the salt up. And the salt is not gone, it's become inert and insoluble. So we could regreen the Middle East. We could regreen any desert. and we could desalt it at the same time. And if we can do it on an insignificant flat, little bit of 10 acres of flat desert, if you give us something with catchment or a wadi or a, you know, canyon or any of those erosion gullies, we can turn it right around completely. You can fix all the world's problems in a garden. You can solve them all in a garden. You can solve all your pollution problems and all your supply line needs in a garden. Now, most people actually today don't actually know that, and that makes most people very insecure.
Here we are at Green in the Desert, the sequel, and this is our demonstration site that we've funded, we're in control of, and we will continue to fund with education and run this as a master plan project for the Permaculture Research Institute of Jordan, for the people of Jordan. And we have already established trees here, and we have olives and pomegranates and guavas and some citrus, date palms, multiple legume trees. We're building infrastructure right now. We've got a shower toilet block under construction and a course being taught, the first course. So there's funding already coming in. This will be an ongoing project. This will be a benefit to the permaculture movement globally as a model, and this will be a benefit to the local people of Jordan and the Middle East. You wouldn't think this was a good starting point for a garden. Pretty rocky, pretty poor soil. 7 years ago, that's exactly what that looked like. And now it's an abundant food forest with a whole mixture of species. And it's built its own soil. With an overstory now of leucaena and prosopis giving us that lovely filtered shade, we have olives, carob, pomegranate, guava, bananas, apricot, and grapes as a trellis. We're here planting trees, extending the design and the example, building soil processes, extending the project demonstration site. Our students have left, they've gone back all over the world to great distances, China, Singapore, Italy, Spain, England, even Australia. Here in the Middle East, students have left to go to Egypt and set up project sites under the master plan. All these places potentially setting up under the master plan demonstration sites and education centers modeled on our example, themed on soil fertility with productivity, a very important link for food security worldwide that we have to realize is a design imperative that we get right for the abundant future that we have to aim for. This is the world of permaculture. This is what we have to do to solve the world's major crisis problems that we have. Supplier resources are needed, local resources in a sustainable way. This is the world of permaculture. This is what we have to do. We're getting on with it. Come and join us. This is the future.
Jordan in the Middle East is the most water scarce, water insecure country in the world per capita to landscape to water recharge. I've been working in Jordan since 1999. It's been quite a journey. We've been on the ground in the most hostile environments. The lowest place on earth with some of the saltiest soils and the saltiest water I've ever had to use. And yet, sticking to the permaculture design system, to the mainframe, I ended up with a result that's been the very best result I've ever achieved. I've been able to give people real hope. This is a project that I want to take you through to where it is now, to where it was. Let's go through this journey together. Come along with me. This is going to be great. The Jordan Permaculture Project that we're engaged with is in the Dead Sea Valley. It's the lowest place on Earth, 400 meters below sea level. So it's rather an unusual climate, because at its latitude, it's actually in a Mediterranean region, but because of its lack of altitude, it's more of a subtropical temperature range with an extreme heat and dryness in summer. In this last year, Jordan has experienced one of the coldest winters on record and now one of the hottest summers on record. So this has been a real test case for our site. But what we have is 3,000 square meters of hard, harsh landscape. This is not the ideal site to settle. This is the site that we chose to set an example of what a lot of people have to live with in the sediments in the Dead Sea, which are a lot of westerly rocky slopes settled by what have been the refugee villages of Palestinians. Now, this site has been a real challenge. Very little soil, enormous amounts of rock, so much rock we had to build rock wall, earthback, contour, swale, catchment systems to rehydrate the landscape when it does rain. Now, the rains are very, very small. It's only 150 to 200 millimeters of rain a year. As usual in these hot, arid landscapes, it's crucial that you catch all the water you can and soak it all into the soils and the subsoils to avoid evaporation. This we've done to establish extremely hardy desert trees to give us extra anti-evaporation strategies of shade, wind buffering, and the production of pretty good nitrogen-rich mulch, because most of these trees are going to be nitrogen-producing leguminous trees. That's how they survive. They're hardy pioneers. And we've had to be hardy pioneers as well to manage this site into a pioneering succession that's given us the ability to start to plant other trees and other crops. We started off with olives because they're one of the hardiest, then date palms, pomegranates, figs, some citrus, mulberry, carob. They're all there, and we've increased the diversity of nitrogen-rich support species as well. So we've even gone into more beneficial support as well as diversifying our food forest type assembly. It's a forest desert forest garden, it's a food forest, where we've been able to then move into crops, herbs, small animals, production of natural fertilizer, and we've positioned infrastructure that is designed to be an example of what can be copied locally, but it functions as an institute. So we have a house that doesn't have a kitchen, because we need a large kitchen to cater for the students that come to learn. We have a separate kitchen. We have a separate bathroom and toilet complex, but we're demonstrating waterless toilets, compost toilets, and a shower block where we have male and female showers and large amount of showers and toilets, but our showers, our grey water, go to a biological cleaning system run with reed beds, and the water is cleaned naturally with the roots of the reeds and can water fruit trees because it's cleaned up enough to be safe to use in the environment. It's not cleaned up enough to drink. You could go that far, but we don't have to. And we've positioned the main shower and toilet block and reed bed system high in the landscape so we can gravity water all through the project site. Now, we've also even positioned a small reed bed made out of recycled materials just to run on the one kitchen sink. We're also demonstrating systems like wicking beds made from recyclable materials. We've got vegetable systems under shade rather than in polytunnels. We've got special formed vegetable beds that are sunken to reduce their water use and avoid evaporation under shade to extend crops over the year. We also have small animal systems for manure and natural fertilizer creation through compost. And we have roof gardens being established. We also have renewable energy systems. There's no shortage of sun. There's plenty of sun energy for hot water production, which is easy, hot enough almost to boil your tea and your boiling water in midsummer. And we have solar electricity and a grid switching system where we don't need a generator, but we can actually use the grid to charge our batteries or run extra electricity if we need to, but most of the time we can run on renewable energy systems. We even have specially designed buildings where we have our main house as a straw bale insulated on the sun and western side and mud brick on the east and northern side to bank the cool, so we don't need air conditioners. These are all examples we've crammed into our site so that we can show local people that there are many facets to this system of permaculture design that they can take and realize these clever little systems all put together make life easier, even when you're on a westerly slope with lots of sun, rock, and poor soil conditions. You can still make life a lot better. And if you extend this out into better country, you can do very well economically. So the project just keeps going. We now have 8 accommodation rooms, 8 bedrooms in a 2-story straw bale building here. We're gonna now improve the gravity irrigation on the internship that's just about to run. Plus, we're gonna put in wicking bed roof gardens right through the building over the top. We've got a second commercial kitchen being installed. We've got an improved shade system over our kitchen garden, and the food forest irrigation system is all getting extended. So this project should just keep going on into the future. Little by little, increment by increment, we're extending the demonstration to the advantage of the people that come here to learn. This is a special project. It's in a special place, and we intend it to keep going. So we really want you to understand this is possible even in extreme environments, and you know wherever you are, you can enjoy the journey.
Well, wasn't that amazing? I really, again, I have to say those before and after photos are just stunning. It's just a miracle that such a thing can be done. And actually, that ability is available to you too. You know, the permaculture principles work. They work. And I've actually been thinking about taking Jeff's permaculture design certification, which is available online. I highly recommend it. I haven't gone through it yet. I really want to. I'm trying to get my schedule clear. If you click on the button to the right, you will get lots of information about that. I'd also suggest signing up for Jeff's newsletter. It comes out every Friday. It's called Friday 5. And he's usually got just some really interesting news and tidbits and updates about what's going on in the world. Definitely a man to watch and stay in touch with. Click to the button on the right. Well, I was going to tell you about that bonus, and it turns out that Jeff's organization has another piece of footage called Patterns in Nature that Jeff created, where he's talking about different patterns and shapes that he sees repeated over and over again, which tie into fundamental permaculture principles. And they've allowed us to use that footage during our encore day, which will be Monday. So if you'd like to see that, I'd highly recommend you tune back in on Monday and catch that presentation on Patterns in Nature with Jeff Lawton. Okay, this is Marjorie Wildcraft, and you're with the Mother Earth News Online Homesteading Summit. We've got a lot of other presentations for you, and I'll catch you on another one.